and welcome to Waitui in JavaScript podcast. This is episode number 66, and I'm Arthur Sossins, the co-host of this podcast. And as always, here with me is Manuel Lemos. Hello, Manuel. How are you?
Now I'm having fun because it's a different perspective to see how Arthur's can do as a presenter. And so far, we have been doing well. Fine too, but since my throat is a bit too dry after recording several podcasts, thank you, Arthur, for accepting this invitation to be the main presenter today.
Okay, first, as usually, let's review the topics for this podcast. At first, we will discuss the proposal for using decorators in JavaScript, what they are, and are they coming to JavaScript or not. In the next topic, we will discuss this new feature in ES6 symbols, what they are, how to use them. Honestly, we have no ideas yet ourselves, but this article is pretty descriptive. Next topic is modules coming to the web platform, described by the standards, how they are created and what they would be and what to expect. Then there is an interesting post. What if we had a great standard library in JavaScript? And by library, it does not mean a package that or a class that you would use, but a real library with books. So it's an analogy that author uses in the blog, and why we would also see later. But basically, it describes the whole system in JavaScript and depending on many other modules, packages, and stuff like that. We also have a blog post by NPM, which is Node Package Manager, and they share their statistics, how many there are packages and how many users are using them and how often they are downloading them. It's also really interesting, and you will see that numbers are really great. Then we can have a moment of fun viewing a couple of comics about JavaScript. From the comic strips, they are usually making fun of tedious web developer work, and maybe you like it and want to check it out more. Then, if you are older than 20 years, then you could probably remember Clippy from old Microsoft, which was a helper, and here is a library that adds it to your website or app, so we will discuss it more too. Then there is the library Expander, which allows you to expand texts in your paragraph that would, for example, describe specific definition or term that you used in your text. Then there is a blog post about Visual Studio and specifically Salsa, a language service which is static analysis for the JavaScript that Visual Studio might use. Then there is an article about style sheets in JavaScript and specifically Meet CSSX, which would allow you to create the style CSS style sheets programmatically. Then there is a package, a library called ScrollBear, which would allow you to preserve your scroll position while loading images. So if you know there are if you have websites that have a lot of images, then while they load, you get a jumpy scroll bar. You can concentrate on single image that can't read anything. And this library would help you with that. And in the end, Manuel would probably discuss new additions to the PHP and thus JS classes website and a new award and certificates and many other things that you really want to hear. Okay, so let's start with the first topic. So we actually recently described this in a PHP podcast in RFC that they want to add attributes to the PHP, which is like annotations to Java. And do we need something similar for JavaScript? And it turns out there is already an ECMAScript process, which is in stage one of describing how these kind of annotations would look like. And for now, they are really similar to annotations in Python, which are called decorators. So the proposal will also be called JavaScript decorators. Syntax, I'm not familiar actually with Python decorators much more, so after reviewing this article also that I could understand that syntax would be with a prefixed at symbol to specify some properties or some attributes for properties to use, like marking this property as read-only and stuff like that. But if you are familiar with Python, you would probably find it much more understandable than I do. Manuel, do you have any experience with Python or annotations at all that you want to share?
No, Python for me is tap, tap, tap. But I'm starting to understand what is the purpose. So it's a sort of a definition of annotations for JavaScript built in the language, so it's not comments in the middle of the code.
No, not exactly like that, yeah. It's more built in the language, and that could actually apply some behavior to the properties, like, you know, read-only property, for example.
Yeah, this. So the purpose is the usual, like I have some applications that could extract that information for some purpose, so that metadata, but how it would work? Because decorators, it suggests the decorator design pattern, which is totally different thing, right? And so they are calling decorator annotations, and do they define some API to access those annotations, like there is a reflection in PHP?
Actually, I don't see anything like that about that in the article, but probably they would. Since it's just in a stage one ECMAScript process, then probably it's not finished, not everything, everything is thought of, but you can check the article and see the couple examples that they have here, so it's work in progress.
Yeah, you may want to zoom in it because it's not very readable.
Yeah, it's okay.
Okay, that's better.
Yeah. So I don't know if you saw the annotations look, but yeah, here they are.
So if they have add character, it's annotation or?
Yeah, it's really hard to understand because here again, you can have something like this.
Well, it's
so
they have also a function that can be called at runtime, so it's probably somewhat similar to the reflection API of PHP.
Probably, yeah.
Which in turn is similar to the reflection API of Java.
Of annotations, yeah. And they all have different names. So, next topic, let me just zoom in from the start, is the symbols. Again, it's something coming with ES6, and it's a new primitive type, which was kind of hard to understand at first, but basically symbol is just an object for which you can change the behavior. So they named this it a symbol, I think, not to break any backwards compatibility, so object remains object and it remains the way it behaves, but symbol is something that you can change yourself. So first point that they mentioned, that symbols are even never equal with each other, and the syntax is actually some kind of interesting. So they have a predefined symbols like symbol iterator. It's an iterator object, so by changing it, you change the way how objects would iterate, for example. And there are many predefined symbols that they already provide, but you can also create your own symbol, your own object, and do something with it. And of course, they also discuss the usage. Okay, there is specific usage and problem with TypeScript, but what was more interesting about the usage in browsers and support. And I think I can't find where I read that, but that not all browsers would support all symbols. So, for example, you could modify iterator, use iterator symbol in some specific browser, but it might not be available in others yet and stuff like that. But that's usual thing we get with new additions to JavaScript.
Okay, so this is to expand the language and create new symbols?
Yes, something like that. It's changed the whole way language behaves, does, and stuff like that. And I can't, again, maybe come up with a specific use case for this, but I bet there are some cases when you might want to change something like that. Like, here is an example of the replacing summary. So,
yeah, I see. So, they're trying to add more advanced features.
Yes. Okay. And next is again ECMAScript related, is the modules. I think we already discussed modules a little bit in some previous podcast, but basically this is from the formation that actually works on the specification of modules, and they have series of blog posts about new features, and in this one they are specifically sharing modules. So module would be a separate script or a separate file or script that would have like its own scope, and everything defined there would be like only in this module. I think the similar thing, you know, is our common JS modules that are now used by Node.js, for example, right? Okay, let me zoom in maybe so it would be possible to see. So I think the inline script definition of module would look something like that. So we define a separate module here, and then we can require it and use it. And as they discuss here, that first specification that they gave on modules was kind of vague, and it was hard for them to come up with a more precise specification, so it could be used in both browser and in server side like Node.js. So all that they can tell that upon requiring module, there would be some specific hook that is called, and then based on the medium with where it is run, or server side or browser side, the implementers would do something on their own to load this specific module. So it's basically all that they can say for now for that. And they discuss some specific pull requests and things they work on. So, and support for different engines. So if you're interested in that, you can check it more. But, also there are some worker modules. So there are different module like types for purposes. So there could be worker modules that probably would be run in parallel or something like that. And so, yeah, it's again a new feature, which is more popular right now in Node.js. So as Manuel probably doesn't develop in Node.js, can't comment much. And I myself also hard to grasp it from the browser end side, or what would be usage options, possibilities, and why would this be required for browser side. But I think we will see when this comes around and when we can really play with it and do something with it and see real life examples.
So the idea is to implement what Node.js already implements, the node imports, right? Or not?
Well, it's even more complicated than that, because they want to redefine what module is and make Node.js re-implemented the way they define it. So currently, Node.js uses common JS module types, which is one specification, but they use some kind of other specification. So as they want to behave them, same way on the browser side and server side. Node.js will probably have to redo something on their side, so they will be truly cross medium. And the next blog post is by Thomas, and it's called "What if we had a great standard library in JavaScript?" So as he mentioned, that there are lots of NPM packages, over 250,000, and lots of them are just simple packages doing some simple job one-liners, and still many folks are reusing them in their own as dependencies. Instead of writing this one-liner yourself, there you are downloading a package. And what he compares to it, that if the normal library with books would be written, like represented in JavaScript, it would look like a scrap of papers connected with strings. So if you want to read the book, you actually need to follow a string to read another piece of paper, another piece of paper, another piece of paper to get the full picture. So that's what title it is and how you would compare it with the real life library would be written in JavaScript. And there are, of course, lots of other points he makes. So are single-purpose libraries bad? Of course not. They're good. If some library follows the specific purpose, and the author, as author says it, he has developed some simple libraries themselves, but what he is against is the specific one-liner little code tasks that you rely on as dependencies. Because as we remember discussing in previous podcast, when one developer actually removed his package, which was kind of, I don't know, 13 lines long, and break lots of other packages who depended on it. But it was only 13 lines, so if everyone would write them themselves, then this would never happen. But problem is that it's against the ideology that maybe not specifically JavaScript, but Node.js have right now. What point this author more raises that there are two questions you should ask yourself when developing your software. So when we see the NPM way to depend on many different dependencies, even for small tasks, we can ask, does this functionally work? Of course, yes, it works. You just download it or implement it in auto-loading in your installation script and stuff. Okay, is it performant? Probably, yes. You maybe not know. You don't see the other code. You can test it. It runs okay. Is it relatively easy to understand? And here comes this part that every other module that you have is like a black box. You just input something to it, and then you get in return, and you don't really know how it works underneath. Probably, if there is a code that you can write yourself and understand it, you could better use it rather than relying on a black box, something to do for yourself. And of course, you should ask yourself how long it would take you to implement. This is a really big feature, or you're at short on time, of course, you're free to use the dependencies, but sometimes you could implement things yourself. And as he described, that in either of the approaches, there would be a bad side, that either you are reinventing the wheel for the nth time, or you are reusing a small package to deal with some specific task.
It's a sort of a dilemma, because either you save time and effort to reuse other's code, or you are at the chance of breaking your code because somebody else changed your dependency, right?
Yeah, true. And all I know, there is an interesting picture of how it looks like of combining different parts from different animals. So it's a really interesting read, all in all. And if you are more interested in this ideology of depending on different module dependencies, net, or and author's thoughts about it, you should read it. But I think we have covered it enough, and let's move on to the other topic. So NPM, which is the Node Package Manager, their official blog, they released some statistical information about usage of Node.js modules. And so as we see, 2013, which is like was 3 years ago when they started, they have a lot, and they have quite a boom in 2013-15, and it's still rising, still going up. And now they have over a billion weekly downloads for the different packages. So, and it's still rising up, as you see. So really lots of developers depend on this system and getting your dependencies from it and reusing. And the more interesting that, well, if you see the unique IP address, which could address unique users or unique servers, then there are more than 3 million users right now. And even more interesting that per one, so there are different sessions, so they're using Node.js multiple times per month, upgrading software or installing again or installing stuff like that. And per one session, they download on average about 50 packages. So each project that is developed and installed or updated has around 50 dependencies that are downloaded from NPM modules.
Wow, that's a lot of dependencies.
Yeah, it seems so. So yeah, this article kind of proves, this blog post kind of proves what we had discussed previously, that there are really a lot of lots of the NPM modules and lots of dependencies.
Right. I think that's probably one thing that gets my attention. With so many packages, it's hard to get attention to one specific package. So you publish it there, and probably very few individual users will look at it and use it, because it's one drop in the sea, right?
True. If there is not specific case or specific, plugin package for other larger product, that probably no one would really notice it right now. But being Node.js developer myself, I usually when I need some functionality, I at first check and NPM.js registry and find results, test them. So it could be possible to find what you need there, but when there are many alternatives, of course, no one would really care about the other ones, but check the most popular ones with more downloads. So yes, for new packages, it would be hard to get more downloads that way.
Yes, it's not just that. It's also hard for users to know what is best. Probably look at download statistics. I don't know if they provide them. And sometimes it doesn't mean much, because there could be other better packages for your purposes, but they are not well promoted.
True.
Yeah. Well, maybe they could implement an innovation award over there, so
to promote innovative packages. True, that's something they could do.
Or the authors send them to JS classes so they can get some exposure. okay, that's hard to be popular when you are just one drop in the sea, as I mentioned.
Yeah, true. Okay, and the next topic is actually a small comic strip by comicstrip.com. It's a web comic about developer's life, and this one actually hits our topic quite well. As you see, some developer needs to install Bower through NPM to install require.js, which loads the Babel plugin, which would transcompile your ECMAScript compliant code to the understandable JavaScript for browser, and you do that all even before you start writing the code. And for all-time developers, it seems like too much hassle, because you just have your jQuery and write your code in the browser and stuff like that. And if you're interested in this kind of jokes and material, this comic strip actually has lots and lots of interesting other comics, like a story about how full-stack JavaScript developers started out and stuff like that. So yeah, really recommended for other web developers to look at themselves or maybe find similarities in their colleagues and have fun about it.
Yeah, it's really ironic, the story. And you thought that jQuery is sort of messy with so many plugins to pick. At least you know where to start, and it's not that complicated. But nowadays, with all the complications of installers and autoloaders, it seems like you have to take a course before you get started to be a new programmer.
Yeah, and everyone thinks that's normal, that's okay. And I think there were even comments in this comic strip like, I prefer the times when you didn't need to know JS deeply in order to be good web developer, just the essentials. Yeah. So now you have to have really deep understanding of how it works. And that's what the old timers probably can't understand more.
Yeah, are you calling me an old timer?
I call myself old timer in that case, because I also started out with plain JavaScript even with jQuery.
If you are an old timer, I am dead.
Okay, not that bad, but yeah. So there are also many other jokes, both about JS and PHP and front-end developers and web developers and stuff like that. And it's great that the developers can laugh about themselves and about the situation they are in.
Yeah.
Okay. For the next topic, there is the Quippy.js. So as I said, if you were using Microsoft Office, I think till 2003, maybe. I don't remember exactly when they killed those little helpers, but I was using, I think, from Microsoft like 98 or something like that, and they have these little helpers. When you open a Word document, this little helper would help you to search, to understand these functionalities and stuff like that, and you could even change them to different characters. But Quippy was the default one appearing, and now there is this JavaScript library, Quippy.js, that would implement all these animations in, how did they implement this actually? In not even canvas, it seems to be
images.
Images, yeah. Interesting, really interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, so, it's funny that somebody bothered to create this.
Exactly.
And they even show a window in the Windows 2000 style or Windows 98 style.
Yeah, well, this probably does not work. It just something to bring your nostalgia back. But yeah, the library actually has the API to control the characters.
This is even older when you just needed to know jQuery.
even older, yeah. Probably even to know front page or something like that. So I don't know actually the purpose, would anyone really implement such helper to their website, but just for a fun project, it's a really nice and interesting one.
Yeah, nobody will do that.
You don't want to add it to a JS classes site? To help navigate the site or something?
Just to distract the users from the actual thing that they want to do.
Yeah, true. That's probably why they removed it from the originally from the office, because it was more distracting than helping. But at least everyone remembers and likes those animations. Like the cartoons of that time. Okay, next topic is Expounder. So if you have a text and you can have specific words there, and for example, you want to explain it or elaborate more on the topic, you just define it and define specific data, the tag with data attribute for the whole text that you want to hide, and you would be able to show it on the quick. I think you were not able to hide it again back, but still it just reveals some text when you're clicking. So it's not exactly like read more feature when you truncate article and then you have read more. Of course, you can use it that way too, but it's more for allowing to select users if they want to read more on a specific topic or not in the same text, in the same page.
Yeah, it's like a read. No, it's not read more. A read in the middle.
Yeah. Okay. Have you had any ideas if you could use it, for example, in your website in JS classes or PHP classes?
No, but we'll talk a bit more about the certificates. But one thing that happens that the certificates have. A text that is the original nomination reason, and some explanations are a bit too long, and the space in the PDF is limited, so I cannot put a scroll bar on a PDF document.
But you can't put the library too, because PDF.
But in that case, it would be more the read more.
Yeah.
Read more. And I use something that is not yet standard, which is line clamp. It's a CSS property that WebKit supports that you can say, oh, only show me the first 7 lines of text.
Oh, interesting.
And it's not new, and it did not require any JavaScript, because after it wouldn't work in a PDF document.
Previously, only used ellipses that truncates the text of some with provided.
It defaults to the clip, the overflow hidden. But there is that line clamp, but after 7 lines, if there is more text, you just put the ellipses. Because the ellipses only works for horizontal clipping. And line clamp is for vertical lines.
Makes sense. Yes, but if you have a specific case when you want to show some text in the middle, then this package would be perfect for you, especially to elaborate and explain in some specific terms.
Yeah, I can see it when people want to, like the long instructions to submit a package.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but that is still a read more, because it appears below.
It depends on how you design.
Yeah. Well, next time you submit the package, you'll see that now you only have 5 points, which is very basic, and all those explanations that most people would not read are like a single click on a link, and they appear, and if you want to read them, you read them.
Okay, and the next topic is previewing Salsa. So the Visual Studio has a support for JavaScript, but for now, how they provided some IntelliSense or error debugging, not debugging, but identifying and showing errors, was that actually they were, while you were writing your JavaScript code, they were running it from time to time and seeing if it compiles, if it provides any errors and stuff like that. And while it would work for small projects, but once you have some larger data processing, some loops or some asynchronous functions that query data from other servers and stuff like that, it all becomes unusable, and because it should be executed every time and every time and every time. And so they introduced the Salsa language service, which would be a static analysis tool that analyzes the your JavaScript code and would provide the same stuff that Visual Studio provides, like errors, code completions, and even type hinting, probably would provide it in a much more efficient way, because it doesn't really need to run your code multiple times. And I think, as I say, you can already enable this Salsa in Visual Studio 15 preview. I don't know. I'm using Visual Studio for some other project, but it was quite an older version, I think 12, maybe 13. And I did not use it for JavaScript, so I can't say exactly, but as they say, that you can enable and try it out, and it also supports six and common JS modules and GSX. So it would be like React. So they can really analyze the framework and help you use it, provide all the methods and TypeScript type definition. Okay, so you can also define the types through annotation like comments, like JS doc probably.
Yes, that's interesting.
That's also nice. That's every time it's nice to see something like that for weakly typed languages, because it's really hard to provide such functionalities comparing to strictly typed languages, for which it's like a no-brainer and every IDE would have it. So if you are into Visual Studio or looking something to try out for your JavaScript, you can try Visual Studio, of course, too. And see how it goes, but as I said, it's something new. They're still adding it in preview, so we will see how it develops, and if anything more pops, we will probably cover it later in other JavaScript podcasts too.
Okay.
And next topic is finally CSS in JavaScript. So this author had an idea like in 2013, 3 years ago, that he wants to have a library that would manipulate CSS style sheets. He wanted to have it first, this preprocessor, which would parse it and then do something, stuff like that. But then he understood that it's hard to do it, and not all browsers would support creating or parsing style sheets. I remember wanting to do something similar myself, and it was really hard to do it for that purpose. But then he decided that he would just create a style sheet API and inject style notes in the web document, and that actually works in basically all the browsers that support style tags. And so this library, which is called CSSX, was developed, and it would allow you to define all your CSS in JavaScript. So as the author says, that now you can define both HTML and JavaScript through frameworks like React, for example, and now you can define CSS in JavaScript. So basically all your web page can be a single JavaScript file, and that's all that you need. Portable copy over to any server, single JavaScript file, that is basically all that it needs in one file. It's really an interesting thought if you think about it, but probably that would not be the main reason why you use it. Most probably it would be for creating themes or making more dynamic changes, so you would allow users to adjust some things and dynamically generate these style sheets be based on user settings. At least that's what I probably would use it.
Yes, I actually remember having seen a similar library, but for PHP, to compose CSS. CSS rules dynamically, programmatically, I mean. But that's a different approach, because you would be actually defining style sheets that are not affecting the current document, because you are on the PHP side.
Yeah, you don't be outputting it. But this one actually has lots of like advanced features to use, that you have a style sheet that you created, you can add like a clause that is media query, and then add children to that media query. So it's really, I think it probably supports everything that you can do in CSS, really, not just changing styles of specific elements or classes or IDs, but even maybe queries and probably font loading and stuff like that. So it's not simple, it's really advanced, and author has really thought about it when creating it. So if you need some similar functionality, you can definitely check out what CSSX is. And the last library we would want to show you is a scroll bear. So as I said, if you have a website with lots of, I can probably do it only once because images are cached. Let me check. So.
Yeah, you need to see it without
scroll down. Yeah, so as you see, it's always jumping to the last image, but in this place, it's always standard, this image to which I scrolled. So if you have an image-intensive website, when user visits it, it usually loads first image, then the next one, and if user already scrolled, it would jump forward to some position. But with this library, you can make it constant available for users to view this specific one image.
But what would be the difference of if the image tags already have the height of the images?
I don't think that would actually make difference. They would already reserve the space. But I think that probably you can't always predict the height. What image would happen to
you. Okay, that's when you don't have the height.
Yeah.
Okay, I see.
When there are arbitrary images, like an imager, for example, I don't know if they have something like that or not.
Right. So that's
more the case. Yeah. So again, a single simple purpose library, but it's probably would be easier to use it than develop it yourself.
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't know what they do. I mean, do they probably fetch the height of the images and cache them somehow? So next time it won't jump.
I think they record the scroll position, and then when the image is loaded, they get the image height and then edit the scroll position and scroll it back to the position or something like that.
I see.
Okay, and the last topic is about how to win a big PHP elephant. Is it available for JS classes too, or on the PHP classes?
No, for now, the focus is more on the PHP classes. So this article let me share here.
Maybe you can better share.
And it's basically just to announce a bunch of features that I've been developing in the last weeks, months, to improve the experience of authors that want to submit packages. Over time, things change. Authors start submitting packages that are bigger and bigger, so certain tasks became painful. Other tasks, not painful, but we were confusing. So just briefly, just to mention what was done and the explained in this article, is several things that the authors wanted to actually make the experience and the benefits of the submitting packages to the PHP classes and JS classes site better. So for now the big elephant is only available as prize every month for the PHP classes. I'll think about it because to expand to JS classes, let's see how it goes. But the complication is that to ship these elephants is a lot of work. You not only have to put the elephant in a box and ship it. We have to fill lots of forms when to send to another country because regulations. Last time the Innovation Award winners of the year were sent, it was a lot of complication, more than previous years. So for now, it will be just for PHP. But other than that, the one nice thing that it was added is Innovation Award certificates, which are basically PDF-based files that you, as Innovation Award winner or nominee, you can get to let certify that you have reached a certain position or why your package is nominated. Artists, you may want to show you on your side one package that was
JS classes.
Yes.
You don't have anything nominated on JS classes.
Not mine, just yours.
I know. Okay.
I don't nominate myself. I have that problem.
Okay.
And well, basically, those are certificates that you can download by going to your author page, and then for the packages that you are already ranked, if you are nominated and the results already come out, so the vote already ended, you can show all the certificates. Look and. And you can then save the certificate with basic save as function of your browser, and you can print it. There are information not only of your name, your rank, the month and the year, the title of your packs, and the nomination reason, which is something that was talking about. When this nomination reason is too tall, it will be clipped. But the latest WebKit version, I mean the Chrome version, will support line clamp, which is a property that limits the number of lines. The title will still be clipped, but it will be more pleasant to see than clipped line, just so an ellipsis. Then there is the URL of the package to somebody that may want to go to the site and verify that you really won the Innovation Award, and that's it. I hope authors like the way it looks. Artists, you can tell me what is your opinion.
I can't understand why in JS class certificate there is a PHP code in the background.
I knew that you were going to mention, but I was hoping. Well, the problem is that that is a static background and it is complicated to personalize. I wanted to do the
best, actually,
the best to avoid to have separate templates for the different sites.
you actually could take the code from the package, render it, and put another certificate in the background.
Yes, use some rotation and
transform. Exactly.
Or just ignore some people that will complain. Or just make some JavaScript code that looks like PHP, or some PHP code that looks like JavaScript. Since this was done by a PHP developer, now you can understand why. It was not me, it was Roberto Aleman that did this template. So this is one of the new features. The other feature that I'm going to comment here, I don't know if you can. Oh, I was not sharing my screen. Just to mention that things very briefly, just so we cannot do not take much longer. This has been a long podcast. Besides the certificates and then the Innovation Award winner of PHP, that will get a personalized elephant with their name and in a stripe. There are other things, for instance, notable packages. When you release a package that is considered notable, there is a new mailing that goes out to many tens of registered users, at least in PHP class site. In JS class site is somewhat less, but they will be immediately prompted, because in the past that used to go just to premium subscribers, and there are no premium subscribers in JS classes, so they wouldn't know what was considered notable. And there is also a post in the site blog to show people that was considered notable and why. The package submission process was also simplified with less instructions, because some people were not willing to read the whole instructions. So now I'll just the 5 lines and that's it. There is also a responsive interface, so you can access submit packages even if you are on a small mobile device. That's not good for uploading files, because nobody uploads files from mobile device, at least I think. But if you just want to import the packages from, for instance, from GitHub, you can do it now from mobile device. Everything will fit. There was also an improvement for fast importing packages from repositories, because before the site would require the author to tell the roles of the files, to tell if this is a class, an object, or if this is an example, a documentation. Now there are some heuristics that the site uses to guess the roles, and you no longer have to do it unless you want to fix some guess that was wrong. So that is one thing that Arthur's I did not have the time to let you know, but once you have time to submit a package, let me know if it is guessing right. I have some rules, at least for JavaScript, to guess what is a module, which would be considered a class. And for PHP, it is easier, because PHP has its own parser built in the language. So it can parse and let me know what is a class, if there is a class in there, an interface, an object. If there is some code trying to create an object, it is considered an example. But for JavaScript, I had to just do some dirty tricks, like search. If there is a new statement in the middle of the code, it is an example. It may not be an example, but okay. But this, if there is a this dot reference, it is a class, because only inside a class you can use this dot. Can you use elsewhere, but it has a different meaning. It refers to a different object. And well, okay, that is an improvement. So now it is easier. You should just in a few clicks import your package from a repository. And there is also a new enhancement, which is let your authors specify where they want to tell eventual contributors to go to collaborate in their package development.
is it available on JSON-SS2?
Yes, that is available on both sites, because that part is common. There is no difference. Even the only difference is the rules for guessing file types. But even that there was an effort to make it to work more or less in JavaScript. Other than that, the package approvals were made faster because sometimes people had to wait weeks until I had time to fully review a package. Now the package, I do just a brief review, make a few edits on the description, and maybe later I will fix the description and fully announce it, nominate it to as notable or for the innovation award, which always happens in the end of the month. But that's basically the improvements, and I hope authors appreciate more and feel more motivated to submit their packages, because before it was really bureaucratic, and people, younger generations, want to do less and less to achieve more and more. So I hope these enhancements are appreciated. So Arthur, just let me know what you think.
And that's it.
Oh, no, I was hoping tell me anything about your opinion.
I'm just trying to find the place where you can put the collaborate link in JS classes, but for some reason
the collaboration link is related to the repositories that we import, so you need to go to the, as you might see in the article, in the get more collaborators to your packages, it's in the remote repository page. So if you go there and add it.
There is a remote repository page.
You need to use the import link on your package.
Oh, okay.
So you can.
Yes, I see it now. And it automatically. Okay, so it's automatically already linked to my.
Is it automatically linked already? I don't know. Because for existing packages, I did not change anything.
I probably updated it, so site updated it, so it's also a bit to location too.
Because for GitHub, there's a special support to make it more automatic, but for other repositories, it is not so automatic. But I hope that is more motivating, so we don't think, oh, that's bureaucratic, and so.
But yeah, it's working.
Okay, that's fine. Hello, now we are going to comment on the Innovation Award nominees and the winners. As always, here with Arthur Sossinus, a great expert, also won Innovation Awards monthly, and also the year in the past, but JavaScript only, right?
Well,
regarding the Innovation Award, just before you comment about the nominees, just to show this to other people that have not yet seen this, the Elephant Prize will also be available for users.
Not seeing anything if you're showing.
No, I'm not sharing yet. Users that win the monthly Innovation Award, at least just for PHP Plus. So I'm just sharing this picture because not only they will get an elephant, they can get an elephant, they also can get it personalized. Actually, this stripe is a bit wrong because the name of the April winner that already picked this prize is not Sergio, it's Gabriel, but this is already fixed, but this photo is updated. So they'll get this prize. So let's move on to the Innovation Award winners, starting from the winners of February. Arthur, which ones would you like to comment?
Okay. So the first one I wanted to mention. Would be a JavaScript edge exploder animation developed by Mark Rowley from Armenia. And basically it provides a loader animation to show while you are loading, for example, Ajax content. And here are just a few examples that he has provided in his package. So animations are simply populating with the same symbol that you can also specify which symbol to use. And you can pause it and even stop it. And for example, you can have some content, a placeholder, and when you load it, it will change. But when you stop it, it would revert back to the same content. So it's actually quite usable for such Ajax. And you could, for example, use this animation on the specific content block that you're updating and then populate it back with the proper content, stuff like that. Basically that's all. And I like the when classes have the examples, so I can show them also. And this was kind of this class. So thanks Mark for this class. And the second one I will mention is JavaScript Array Compare package by Stephen Chapman from Australia. And JavaScript array class or a prototype has lots of methods, but comparing arrays is still a bit difficult. So this package extends the prototype by adding new methods to compare the arrays. And those methods are matches, which check if there are same values in the same positions of the array. Intersects, which looks for values in both arrays without specific positions, so how many values are matched between these two arrays. And overlap, who also check same values and the repetition times in both arrays. So if you need to do this kind of matches and want to use some larger libraries, then you can include this package and use it. And yeah, and so that's thanks to Steven for developing this one. So I think that's all from me.
Okay, on my behalf, I would like to comment on the remaining package, which is on functions. These are actually inspired on jQuery, but do not require jQuery. So this is interesting. Mm-hmm. As nowadays we need less and less jQuery, but still there are many people that use jQuery because they like plugins. Anyway, these on functions are to register event handlers. So this package from Anders Plath from Hungary was developed precisely to allow you to register and register event handlers. It's always handy because you always need to do that in JavaScript application. So kudos to Anders Plath for showing how to do it without needing jQuery. And for that, he got one downloadable ebook from O'Reilly. Let's now comment on the Innovation Award winners ranking. Now, already considering the nominees of of March. So the ranking basically is first place Ender Stoth with the Packers in 5 points, followed by Stephen Sheffman from Australia with the one Packers in 3 points. Then Pravin Sonawane with one Packers in 2 points from India. Agustin Rios Reis from Mexico with one Packers in 2 points is tied with Farad Rahim from Bangladesh with one package win point, as well Mark Rolich from Armenia. By countries, we can see that the rankings are more or less equal, at least for now, because in the next month we have quite more nominees to rank. So, in first place, Hungary with two packs in 5 points. Australia then in second with packs in 3 points. India with packs in 2 points. Then Mexico, Bangladesh, and Armenia are tied with packs in 1 point. So I guess we reach the end of this podcast today. It was quite long, but I hope it was interesting. And thank you, Arthur, for saving my throat, because after several hours recording, it took quite a long time to talking.
Sure, no problem.
So on my behalf, that is all for now. Bye.
Bye.